Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum Christmas Party. In all good COVID theme, we've ended up with a very depleted Christmas party indeed. No Yestin. Dan Killick still has still either living out of a travel tavern like Alan Partridge, or he's kipping on someone's sofa. So it is down to me and the mighty Murph, as it has been for huge chunks of this year, Murph.
Good point, yeah.
And what a way to finish the year than with a Zoom call party with some warm lager and a bowl of Twiglets. There we go.
And my back support, obviously.
And your back support from carrying the other two throughout the whole of the year. There we go. How are we doing, mate?
Good, thanks. Yeah, very good.
Good. Any thoughts on a favourite Christmas song? Is there one that? How do you generally feel about Christmas music? You're a bit of a music aficionado yourself. Is it one of those where you?
That's a big statement when you're on a podcast with Yestin George saying someone's a music aficionado.
Well, I wouldn't. Given Yestin's attendance record, mate, it's safe to say you're not on a podcast with Yestin George at the moment.
Good point. Yeah, I have waves with Christmas songs because when it gets like to a certain age, shall we say, you realize it's the same dozen songs every year, year after year after year, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Now and again, as a fresh one comes out, like, I don't know, say 10 years ago or so, maybe more than that, Bob Dylan did one.
Oh.
And a real comedy job, like, you know, not a serious Bob Dylan Christmas song. And things like that freshen it up. But generally, I mean, you know, how long ago was it now? I used to go and see the Pogues every Christmas.
I saw them in...
And that was a long time ago. And I saw them still being tripped out every year. Yeah. You see what I mean?
So, I saw them in Brixton in 2013, I think. And, they were doing Guinness in 2-pint glasses, which, I mean, I can't even remember how much it was. You know, it would have worked out about 7 pint per pint, you know. and it felt packed in there. I swear, like, on the way out, I was walking and my feet weren't touching the ground. Do you know what I mean? One of those when you're moving forward.
Yeah, nice.
And I'd never had that feeling in there before. So I wonder whether a few rogues had snuck into the Pogues, so to speak.
Well, when I say every year, I meant they used to do a Christmas tour every year.
Yeah.
And so I'd go and see them at Birmingham, Cardiff one time. I think there was time in Cardiff, Kerris Matthews came on and did the Kirsty MacColl bit.
Yeah.
It was just nice. I know the guests have done that.
Yeah, but I can't remember who did it when we saw him, but yeah.
At one stage, it was Jem Finer's daughter, I think.
It might have been Jem's daughter, actually, yeah.
And then the Cardiff one is just sticks in my memory really strongly because between every single song, Shane McGowan just came up to this is the interlude between every song, came up to the microphone and went, Yaki Da. And then he did his very unique laugh, which was... and then walked away, did the song, and then in the next interval between songs, Yakida! That honestly, about 12 times in between songs, he did that little. It really entertained him. You could tell he was pissing himself over it. After the first three, the whole crowd was like, "Yeah, okay, sure, yeah, we get it, we get it. You're in Wales, well done." Yeah.
Oh, fair play. Yeah, that's hard to beat for me. That will be my all time favorite Christmas song. But I don't know. I seem to find there's like something, some little deep cut surfaces every season, every festive season. So, but yeah, you have to put up with the same 20 songs alongside that as well.
You have to look really obscure to find something you've never heard before when you get to, you know, past your 20s, past your 30s. You know, it gets more and more rare that you'll hear one you've only heard before very many times over, especially if you've ever worked in retail. If you've ever worked in retail, you will fucking hate Christmas songs. As simple as that. So I did that for a while in my 20s, and that's torture. It's actual torture.
Well, talking of things that that feel like they never change, we will be talking about the Dragons' defeat in the first half of the show. We'll also be talking about the Cardiff game against Harlequins. So the first half of the show is going to be a wrap up of the European rugby from this weekend. And then as we get into the second half, we're going to do a few awards for the season as well. So we might have a few serious ones in there, but we've got some stupid ones that have been sent in by our listeners. So a big thanks to that, because it gives us a bit of variety for the second half of the show. So stay tuned for that stuff.
A struggle with serious, as we know.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, famously so. Yeah. Right, where do you want to start, Murph? Cardiff or Dragons?
Either. I've seen the Dragons one, but I watched it late when I got in. Mm. Who did they play again?
They played Leon.
Oh, yeah. Right.
At Rodney on Friday night. And, it was, all a bit worrying. Well, let's start there, seeing as that's the first one you've picked up. The biggest thing for me is I cannot, well, not the biggest thing, but the thing that boiled my piss was the lack of at least a yellow card for that tackle on Josh Lewis. Like, I don't see how you can get a shoulder to the head and you say it's not a dangerous tackle, penalty only. It just doesn't make any sense. And that doesn't happen to a bigger size. I know I'm going to sound like a massive apologist, but there is no way that gets given against, you know, Saracens or Leinster or Harlequins or any of those sides. Those decisions just don't go. I think it was a stone cold stinker. Like, it was a minimum yellow. I things like that can change a game. That said, the Dragons' lack of ability to defend or complete three phases without dropping the ball was probably a bigger concern. But in the end, it was, you know, it was a half decent game in terms of entertainment, because they were still in it towards the end. But yeah, it's becoming all a bit of a, yeah, it's sounding as familiar as that Christmas CD you were listening to while working in Topman.
Yeah.
I've hazarded a guess as to where you were working, Murph.
Oh, it's much more cliched than that. the high tackle thing has become an issue, I think, because there was a stage, obviously, where anything vaguely around the jawline and you were going off. Mm. That was the end of that. And now there seems to be a bit of like a kickback with the referees or the referees' bodies or whoever decides the kind of policy on these things. And now they're kind of nitpicking over whether the initial impact was on the head and slipped up, or whether there was any mitigating factors. But I just think, in the interest of like the spirit of why this rule came in, start at a yellow and work your way up or down from there.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, if there's no mitigating, sadly yellow, if there's no mitigating factor, then it's got to be a red. But if there's something, you know, like, for example, there's been ones where a player's been smashed in the face, but it turns out the guy tackling him was shoved by an opposition player into the tackle, and then, you know, that type of thing. But otherwise, anything vaguely around the chin or around the neck or whatever. The only ones I don't like being automatically yellows or reds are the seatbelt tackles, because they're illegal, but they're not causing concussion, then they're not massively dangerous. But head-on ones, you know, on the point of the chin or whatever, you know, that's why the rule was brought in, because it'll give you concussion. And like, I don't know what the protocol will be with Josh Lewis now, whether he takes a week off or whatever. But you know,
my guess is he's okay because he played the rest of the game, didn't he? But you're absolutely right. The other thing is, it's designed to change players' behaviour, isn't it? And I think we were moving in the right direction. That any benefit of the doubt goes with the attacking player there, you know, for their protection. And if you've smacked him in the head, regardless of what the intent was, you know, it forces you to change your behaviour, to drop lower and drop lower. And the more referees relinquish on this and start saying, well, there's a degree, you know, these kind of grey areas, then you're going to get people still going back to high up tackles. And I just think that sends out the wrong message.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Yeah. It's like I say, there's been a kind of a rebound from where we were, where everything vaguely that way was going. And now they're confused. I think they've confused themselves on the quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that's so frustrating as a Dragons fan, and again, I will get on to criticise the team because I'm not here to be an apologist for them, but the fact that it's happened 2 weeks in a row, that yes, there was a yellow card the week before, but Elliot Dee almost had his head taken off. It was as clear a red card as you will ever see. Mm. And you just think, well, like, you know, You never get the rub of the green when you're a side that's at the bottom of the league or the minnows. You very rarely get those decisions. And I don't know, maybe you do make your own luck, but you kind of feel like if it's a decision like that that's around player safety, I don't know. I fail to understand how they come to those conclusions in consecutive weeks. And you also fail to see how it's going to kind of level itself out over the course of the season. But it was another 20 minutes of the game where the Dragons simply weren't present. You know, there was really, really poor defence. There was simple errors. I'm in two minds as to whether to be really angry or feel really sorry for Sam Davis, because on the one hand, he missed touch with penalties twice, and he's an experienced player who should not be making those errors. You know, he threw an intercept pass. I don't know why all of a sudden in the middle of December he's trying to pass the whole time. Presumably it is a coaching led decision, when actually, you know, his kicking game is far stronger than his passing game. But at the same time, he's played every single game this season, I think. You know, like, there is no other 10 there to take any of the slack. I don't know why they don't consider Lewis as a 10 as well, because I think he's, you know, he's a good running threat for fullback, for a guy who doesn't have a huge amount of pace, but he reads the game in front of him very well, and he's played enough at 10 to be considered. I just think take a bit of the heat off Sam Davis, because he's getting a lot of pelters fired at him. And, you know, again, like I say, there were some awful mistakes in there, but geez, the guy must be frazzled.
Am I correct in thinking that, because I looked at the team sheet before the game, and the back row was Basham, Keddie, Griffiths.
Wainwright came in at the last minute, yeah.
All right. I was thinking, wow, that's a mobile back row. And then when I come home late to watch the game, Wainwright was at 8, so I mean, he's not exactly
it's always a mobile slow, back row, you know,
but that was, that caught my eye, that did that back row initially, but it didn't actually take the field. Sam Davis, you took the words out of my mouth there. I feel sorry for him, because he's got to play. Like, he seems to have to be on the pitch every time and all 80 minutes as well, you know, he very rarely comes off. It makes you wonder if after Saturday the Dragons would be interested in making an offer for Dan Fish.
Honestly, mate, I was watching that game and I just thought, all I want is Dan Fish at 10. I mean, it was, he should have played 10 more in his career. I honestly think
we're getting ahead of ourselves here, because we're still talking about the Dragons, but especially when his problem was repeated hamstring injuries, which just kind of killed all his pace. Not all of it, but, you know, he killed a lot of it. And therefore, you know, 15 was tricky for him. He wasn't getting that many chances in the starting 15 and what have you. So I think he was 10 for our youth team.
Hmm.
At the Wanderers, and then when he came out of the youth team, we were in the Premiership, and Richard Hodges was first team coach at our club at the time, and they moved him to 15. So that, this sounds weird, but it is true. I promise. They moved him to 15 because the plan was to kick long against whatever the opposition was, chase hard to force him to kick to Dan Fish in open field. And then Dan Fish would jog past people. He had this habit of just being able to jog past people. And then we would play off that. And that was a lot of the time. That was Wanderers tactics in the Premiership. Kick long, hard chase. And then you find Dan Fish in lots of space with the ball.
Mate,
when he was 19.
You joke, but when you say jog past people, I saw him do it against Harlequins yesterday. He doesn't have that pace, but the ability to be able to read what's in front and... the basic footballing skills, right? We're going to come on to this because it was another brilliant, hugely enjoyable game. But yeah, just to finish on the Dragons,
yeah.
How important do you think it is that they get some result or at least performances over Christmas, because they look shot of confidence at the moment, and that unfortunately is a place that we've been all too often in their history.
Yeah, there's been a. Coverage of something that the Dragons coach
Dean Ryan.
I was dying to say Rob Baxter. It's interchangeable people for me. Dean Ryan,
grizzled grey rugby coaches,
English hard forwards, you know, from the 90s. He's been quoted as saying something like that we're just being left high and dry in terms of our budget and, you know, how long can it go on like that, and. Yeah, and he's right. I mean, I think, unless I'm mistaken, Leon are like top of the top 14 or something, or I might be wrong there. Anyway, you know, they're no slouches, and they, you know, they actually, although they didn't perform well, you know, that was good opposition they were up against anyway. And I mean, I unless you got this is the issue, unless you got all your first choice players on the pitch, you know, like Will Rowlands wasn't there on Friday, and
He's a massive loss when he's not playing, by the way. They look a much better side when he's on the pitch.
Yeah. So, you know, are you maybe they've rested him. I hope it's only, I hope he's not injured. Maybe they've rested him with an eye.
He picked up a knock the week before, yeah.
Oh, right. Well, that's a bummer. I mean, with an eye to the derbies, because, like I say, the only place they can make changes without drastically weakening their side is the back row.
Mm. Yeah, exactly that.
There is a little bit of leeway in midfield now with Niall Owen and Jamie Roberts and Jack Dixon.
I still think the drop off is big. You know, I think Roberts, particularly last season, I thought Roberts did a brilliant job. Niall Owen's a wonderful prospect. Mm.
Still waiting to see if he makes the Welsh squad.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got all the ability. What I like about him is he looks like he's a little slip of a thing, doesn't he? Like, he doesn't look a particularly powerful player, but he rides contact really well, and you know, he's got a good step on him, and his passing seems decent, and there's a lot to like there. But again, you just think, like, you know, with that bit more, I know Tyler Morgan was always injured, but you know, if you had a player like him still in the squad, because then you're asking a lot of someone like Adam Warren to put in plenty of shifts, and it just becomes a bit difficult, I think. Back three, there is, you know, there's some good gas in the wingers, but you're right. The drop off when they haven't got the first 15 is absolutely massive. But the frustration for me was at the start of the season when we had that first 15 and their opportunities to win the games against the likes of the Ospreys and didn't put them to bed. And that there probably isn't that excuse of not having the squad. It hits you much harder this point in the season.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're looking back on those games and wondering where their next win's coming from. Mm. So yeah, they've had no major disruption to their season with the COVID issue of being stranded abroad and whatever, and that should have given them a bit of. Stability and what have you, or any kind of advantage. Mm. But if for some reason, Cardiff seems to have benefited massively from the disruption of this situation. As far as I know, there's still six of them in South Africa, isn't there?
There is, yes. I thought they all came back this week, didn't they?
Oh, did they? I haven't heard.
I don't know. I was under the impression they were all back, but I might be wrong on that one. But at the same time, they were without 30 players for this weekend, or 31 for this weekend's fixture. And I think that's what makes it all the more frustrating is the siege mentality that Cardiff have put together is so, so impressive. And I thought, you know, last weekend, we said, obviously, we like waxed lyrical about how enjoyable a game it was and all of that kind of stuff. And then I thought, well, actually, going away now to Harlequins, they won't have the crowd. A lot of those players will have had really tough games, won't be able to recover. And it was an even better performance. I was so impressed. Obviously, it helps having, you know, players like Lilo back in the side. Mm. But I think that I just really hope that they're able to build on this, because it was such, you know, to be 17 all with an hour on the clock away to the English champions without 30 of your first choice team and bringing off, bringing on semi-professional players off the bench, well, starting semi-professional players. That's absolutely incredible. It really is. And I think that you just hope that as the squad gets back together now, they're able to build on it and really, you know, galvanise themselves around it.
Yeah, it proves a lot of points, I think, about where you spend your money, because a couple of the players they've raved about over the course of these two games are just young, cheap contract academy players, and they can do a job.
Yeah.
So, and I know I've wanged on about this, but the regions should be spending their money in the front five, and if they need to put an academy boy on the wing, then that's what they have to do to make their front fives competitive. And someone like Theo Cabango, I don't know where he'll end up eventually, whether he makes it all the way or only just becomes like a run-of-the-mill regional player or whatever he achieves. He can do a job in a game like that.
Well, more than do a job. You know, he finished that try brilliantly. He's got, you know, obviously he's got the athletic ability to do it. And, you know, it was really impressive. The fullback, whose name escapes me, Cam Willett, I thought, other than that knock-on, which was gutting. I mean, I'm not being funny, but as you know, we watch a lot of rugby. I had no previous knowledge of him whatsoever.
No.
And I'd never heard of him. And well, he was magnificent.
He is behind Jacob Beetham in the RFC setup. So, I mean, I don't know if you were ranking all the fullbacks in the Blues region, I don't know how far down that he might be 6, 7, 8. I don't know.
Yeah, he's struggling to make the first 15 of 15s. I thought he was amazing. The composure, obviously, he took his try well, but also just the ability to not be fazed by the situation. And that's what I think is there to be built on for Cardiff. Is there is obviously a group of players, and all of those, I say senior players, but I include Jim Botham, Seb Davis in that. Thomas Williams, obviously the Lilos and Halaholo and Ellis Jenkins have all stood up and made those younger players a foot taller. You know, they've all believed in themselves and just said, you know, you go out there and do a job. And the thing that I thought was so impressive was the style of rugby was fearless against both sides. They were tapping and going against Toulouse. Admittedly, you know, Toulouse have got a big pack, and you might say that. But when you're down to semi-professional players coming off the bench, it would also be very easy to try and play a bit more pragmatically. But you just think, actually, play with that lack of fear in the URC. Because, in the Heineken Cup, you could say they're on a hiding to nothing against sides they were always going to lose to. But the UFC is largely meaningless anyway. There's always a backdoor entry into Europe somehow. It's pretty impossible not to make it into Europe. Play with that level of that fearlessness and just develop something that people will be delighted to go and watch on a Friday night. You know, I thought they instilled some real pride in the club and in the city over these last two games. I've got nothing but good words to say about all of those players.
Yeah, absolutely. Just going back on the technical stuff there, say if their first choice players were available, those tap and goes that you talked about, they would have stuck them in touch.
Yeah.
And if they were in the red zone, they probably would have fluffed them.
Yep.
So where's the point? Like even when everyone's available, where you know chances are they'd have been better off using this style of rugby, like you say, if they were full strength. I thought it was that the first 15, 20 minutes of the game. I don't want to get carried away. I know it's tempting, especially when something as exciting as this happens. But I think that's probably the best attacking shape I've seen this season from the Blues.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
A lot of that was Dan Fish.
A lot of it was Dan Fish. And that ability to, you know, I mean, he just doesn't feel any, you know, it's a guy who's got nothing to prove. You know, if he went out there and had a howler and threw four intercept pass, it wouldn't have mattered. But because he's playing with that mindset, he doesn't mind taking two or three dummies and throwing these ridiculous flat miss passes that, you know, that hit Cabango at full pace. And and the kicking game was brilliant. I mean, you know, you said it. I mean, it's criminal that we're looking at this guy who's about to retire for the third time this season. And he's only 30 or 31, Murph. I get it. He's, you know, he'll be a fantastic coach if he can translate any of those skills to the players he's coaching. But Jesus Christ, he could, you know.
He picks a pass, you know, he seemed to have loads of time on the ball and picking his pass as well. And then the things have really, I think, stood him out above any 10 playing for a region this season, probably, you know, I'll go that far. It's probably the best performance from a 10 this season in the region, was his kicks, the attacking kicks, the grubbers and the chips over the top. They left Harlequins in a mess on several occasions. There was one where the winger had to, I can't remember which winger it was. It wasn't Louis Leiner. He was on the bench. He was the guy who was taking Louis Leiner's place. He just had to chase back and kick it out on the full over the dead ball line because he's left stranded by the cleverness of the kick. So, and I think some of the, I don't know. I mean, I can only speculate, but being a coach can make you think more about that type of thing, and it can improve him as a player. And I think that's maybe what we've seen this weekend. But I mean, honestly, the shortage of tens in this country, you could, like, for example, we've just talked about Sam Davies and the fact that he has to play every week. He could earn serious money at the Dragons.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think he'd go to any of the club. I don't think he's. I don't think he would consider anyone else but Cardiff. But like at the moment, Jared Evans, Rhys Priestland, the first choice of the club, and that's, you know, that's adequate. But last season it was Jared Evans and Tubby, and based on obviously Dan Fish wasn't interested or still isn't interested. He wants to retire. But based on this performance, he's a mile better than Jason Tubby.
Yeah, 100%.
A mile. And by the way, not in shape.
Yeah.
He looks like he plays in the championship at my club.
Yeah.
Physically. So. Yeah.
I don't know. I just think, you know, the only thing is we're in danger of doing what we did last week and romanticising about the past and talking about players reading the game and natural footballing ability and stuff. But there is something to be said, you know, in a world where everything is so structured and patterns of play are kind of so telegraphed and, you know, sports science and all of those things have had a massive impact on the sport. But thing is, you know, Harlequins are always going to do those things better than Cardiff or the Dragons or the Ospreys because they've got better coaches, they've got better players. You've got to kind of do things differently. You know, the same as we were talking about the marketing last week, right? You've got to do things differently and just apply. And I think that's what Cardiff did so well over these last 2 weeks is go, well, look, you expect us to turn up and roll over. We're actually going to play pretty fearlessly and see what happens. And it's classic underdog kind of Rocky Balboa stuff.
Yeah.
The thing they've got to do now to finish on the sporting cliches is it's one thing, you know, it's like the third round of the FA Cup, isn't it? Where you get, you know, you get Woking up against Newcastle or Aston Villa or, you know, Premier League side, and they play their hearts out, but they lose 3-1, and everyone goes, "Wow, that was incredible." You've then got to go away to Lincoln or Chester or whatever, and you've got to back it up when you haven't got the adrenaline and the sense of occasion around you. And that's what Cardiff have got to do over Christmas now. They've got to realise that there's something brilliant there. And I think, you know, the other thing is, we've mentioned the players, but a massive hats off to your mate Griff, because there's clearly a lot of that has come from the coaching staff around him, you know.
Yeah. I haven't messaged or spoken to Griff, but I can imagine the backs coach at the Blues is a little bit nervous after the way Griff has coached the side over the last fortnight. I mean, Griff coached the backs at the Ospreys, and in one of his first games was out and out, you know, because he was a skills coach in the background for a long time. One of his first games, when Steve Tandy made him backs coach, they beat Toulouse away.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not a novice by any means, you know. He knows what he's on about. And he only went to the, from speaking to him, he only went into the managing of the academy role to have a break from coaching. But clearly, I mean, and he's been mentoring coaches like Dan Fish, and in the past getting Jenkins as well at the club. But clearly he still knows his shit. So, I don't know if that shape was they used, attacking shape they used at the start of that game, was specifically from analysing the way Quinns defend. I know Quinns they're not a massive defensive side. They like to outscore the opposition, but like they were struggling to work out what was going on. Quinns' defence was struggling to work out what was being done to them early on. I don't know if that was just analysis or I don't know whether or just coaching or what, but. Yeah, what you said there about Cardiff taking it going forward, I think there's big pressure on the first choice players. Because if they just turn up and do the same bland old, you know, caterpillars and kick into the corner and fucking it up, like, you know, that kind of, which, you know, I it's a harsh thing to say, it's something Wales do a lot, actually, is lose line-out ball in the opposition 22. And quite a lot of the time, not all, actually, you know, the Ospreys and Scarlets are quite good lineouts in opposition 22, but Cardiff can't rely on their lineout a lot of the time. And if they come up and just, you know, in the next Christmas derbies and just put that on show again, I mean, it's going to look lame.
It is. And, you know, you just think that, I don't know, I hope that siege mentality continues and they think, do you know what, we've got a point to prove here, that we're not here to finish 7th or 8th in the UFC and be happy with European qualification. And I know there are financial implications for that stuff, but realistically now, the way that Europe qualification is structured, you've got to be really shit like the Dragons to not qualify for the Champions Cup, haven't you? It's like it's that old tier stuff where it's pretty, you know, largely speaking, they've got a damn good chance of qualifying, and you may as well just go for a blaze of glory and you know, create something special there. I just think that's it. I don't know. Maybe again, it's just the old romantic stuff speaking. But that I just don't see that. You're right. I don't see the point in going back to caterpillars and trying to play like all the other teams in the league play when you're never going to have the resources of Leinster or Munster or Ulster. You may as well go all out and try and do something very, very different. And you know, you lose a game by 6-3 than losing a game by 12 points, yeah. Having, you know, having never looked like threatening it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm looking forward to the Boxing Day game anyway, because I normally get a bit stir crazy by then at home. So
it's the Scarlets, isn't it? This Boxing Day, I believe. Yeah, because Dragons have got the Ospreys away.
Obviously there's an issue for the players who've been in lockdown is what sort of shape they're in and can they remember how to catch, you know, it sounds cheesy, but you get out of habits and different things if you're not training every day or all the time. And it's going to be awkward for some of them because there'll be expectation after what's happened in the last fortnight. And also, you know, they haven't really touched the ball in anger since start of the month. So, it'd be interesting to see what the crowd's like after what's happened as well. I mean, it's a big crowd on Boxing Day anyway, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that the biggest concern for the crowd is the state of infection numbers and all that kind of shite. But this is a Christmas party after all, mate. We don't want to bring things down, do we?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday the rumours were going around of a full lockdown. I know they're closing nightclubs after Christmas.
That's right.
But I can't see any, based on everything we've seen so far, we're getting into fucking virology again, I know, but...
Our virology podcast will be a Patreon special alongside Murph's cream egg and cycling podcast.
Cream egg?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Well, whatever point in the year Easter was, you were going through a phase of banging cream eggs and brandy and cokes on air.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, mate, this bodes well for the awards system, the awards part of the show, where I'm asking you for favourite memories of the season and you can't remember back to Easter.
No, I can't. No.
All right, well, I
can remember the autumn. Like the Six Nations just seems like a life. Everything at the moment just is distorted time-wise. Six Nations seems like a lifetime ago. what was I saying? Virology. Based on everything we've seen over the last, we've been in a pandemic now for about 21 months, something like that.
Mm.
It's really hard to catch it outside, COVID outside. So, you know, even if you're shoulder to shoulder squashed on a terrace, it's still really hard to catch COVID in that. So I hope don't stop sporting.
In which case, regional grounds would have been the safest place for the last 20 years anyway, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, on Boxing Day, they get quite a crowd.
That is true. That is true.
So I hope they don't, you know.
And mate, as much as I joke, there's nowhere I'd rather be than watching rugby on Boxing Day. So anyway, let us have a quick break in order for Murph to quickly refamiliarize himself for the last 12 months remember something.
I get the 2021 Rothmans out to work out what happened.
Mate, if there was one, I'd be delighted to get my hands on it. I'd pay good money for the 2021. Well,
there would be one. If there was one, it would have to have a picture of someone really unwell on the front.
Well, I get from smoking the Rothmans.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right, quick break, and then we'll be back after this.
Oh, if you're getting a beverage, I'm getting a beverage.
Absolutely.
Oh, we're both on the SME.
Yeah, mate, this is it. We should get a sponsorship deal from San Miguel or Rothmans. That's what we do.
This is something I got back into, and I actually played rugby against San Miguel Wanderers once, and 20 years ago.
Do they please tell me that that's not actually a part of Spain, and they're just somewhere in Glamorgan?
Weirdly, Singapore. Singapore really? Wanderers got a sponsorship with San Miguel. How the fuck did that happen? I don't know. And changed their name to San Miguel Wanderers. Anyway, let me go to the fridge. One sec.
Place that one yet, Murph?
Stevie Wonder, is that Stevie Wonder?
Stevie Wonder, yeah. Hmm. What Christmas means to me, yeah. I thought you can't go wrong with a bit of Stevie Wonder.
No.
The Motown Christmas albums and the Phil Spector one. Now you can go wrong with Phil Spector, famously, but yeah, the Phil Spector Christmas album as well is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll gloss over that. But welcome back to the second half of the Attacking Scrum office party.
Virology podcast.
the only virology podcast where Murph is photocopying his ass.
No one's qualified in virology.
I can imagine there's a lot of podcasts out there where no one's qualified in virology. I imagine they're very popular amongst the alt-right, which I hope to God we're not. As much as it'd be like to be popular somewhere, the alt-right is not somewhere I want to be a part of. Right, time for some awards, I would have thought, Murph.
Oh, here we go. Hang on.
Oh, here we go. Right. So we have got some jokey suggestions in from the listeners, which is
good. That's okay. I can do jokey answers. That's fine. As long as I don't have to remember anything.
Let us start with jokey, and then we might come on to a few serious ones. But
okay. Hint,
we probably won't.
This is where I always miss the obvious one, or what I would think the obvious one.
Well,
I can't
this
remember.
Is a good one. There is a really obvious one for this one. This one is from the wonderfully named Tom Mullett. And Tom Mullett says, "What's the best try that's not been scored of the season? So the best nearly try."
Well, there's two that come to mind, isn't there?
I.e. Mark Jones against France in 2008, the one we always kind of refer to. I've got one clearly in mind, so I'm going to go with that because I only had one in my mind, and that's the France against New Zealand Intermac from his own line, blind pass. That's the best nearly try I've ever seen in my entire life.
100%. Yeah, I saw a clip of it again this week actually, and you know, aside from breaking in from inside his own dead ball area, the first pass he gave without looking over his left shoulder is beautiful. Yeah, the other one, which is much less likely, it was much less likely to end up as a try, but the Aaron Wainwright breakout against New Zealand, both against New Zealand, funnily enough, which Beauden Barrett later slapped out to the air. I mean, we had to do an awful lot more to score a try from where we were, but if it hadn't been slapped out the air, who knows what might have happened. So that's for me, that would be a close second.
There's two things I like about that. Well, there's a lot that I like about Wainwright, as you know. But it was there was something about the way he made those two or three steps to the right that was hugely old fashioned. And that made it kind of look like a bit of a 70s, you know, it would have been a bit of a 70s try.
Yeah. There was echoes of the Phil Bennett thing.
There was,
minus the 6-yard sidestep, obviously, that Phil Bennett had.
I remember, I also remember reading Benny's autobiography when I lived in Germany for a year, and I read it while I was out there because you couldn't watch any rugby anywhere in 2005 in Germany. And I was reading that out there, and I remember him saying, basically, if it had been a Six Nations game, he'd have booted it clear. A Five Nations game, he'd have booted it clear. And a little part of me was disappointed with that. I was just like, no, I just wanted to believe that whoever it was for, he'd have done it. But it was, obviously that was magnificent and did end up in the greatest try of all time. But there was definitely something about the Wainwright step. But for me, it had to be the intensity of that game of France, New Zealand. And just there's something magnificent about Romain Ntamack, the way he just struts about the field. And I think the best players look like they've got 2 minutes on the rest of the field. Do you know what I mean? They look like they know what's coming in a matter of minutes, and nothing epitomised that more than that blind pass. I'm just like, yeah, I know exactly where this is going.
Didn't fancy the Arms Park last week though, did he?
Yeah, but mate, it's all very well when you're playing against New Zealand and Beauden Barrett and Aaron Smith and all these jokers. When you go toe to toe with Jason, I was going to say Dan Fish, but it's a lot funnier when you say because Fish is a legitimate god. But yeah, that's it. There was something magnificent. I'm giving it to the France one for me.
Oh no, no doubt, but. I can't actually think of any other.
No, we've managed to get back to the magnificent. We've got back to the first week of November, I think.
Yeah,
in our thinking. But yeah.
If we really want to dig the far reaches, is the try we were trying to score at the end of the Wales France game, Grand Slam decider. It wouldn't have been a classic, but it would have been really important to Wales fans. It wasn't. It didn't start from our own dead ball line or anything, but.
No,
I would have been much happier with that one than any of the others.
I'm going to throw this award to you next, Murph. Most enjoyable game of the season. And until a couple of weeks ago, I would have said Wales versus France or France versus Wales in the Six Nations.
Really?
For sheer spectacle and the intensity of it and how well Wales played. And... and given how joyless the entire Lions tour was, given how largely forgettable the region's seasons have been,
the Wales I didn't game at the end of the Six Nations was it seen in the context of last year's Autumn's Nations Cup, which is complete arse.
Yeah,
and then so there was some rugby played in the six this year's Six Nations, and it felt really refreshing. And the probably the most harum scaring game of the lot was the Wales France game over there. So, I've still got it on my TiVo, that game.
I'm not in a rush to watch it again. Because
exactly.
It
still
like
going
watching...
to get me wound up about Luke Pearce if I watch it. So,
I wouldn't mind if every game should be refed like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm done. I'm done with this Caterpillar.
But all or none.
Yeah, well, he obviously had his wings clipped over it. Must have had his wings clipped. Whoever the head of rugby, refereeing at the World Rugby is. I want to say it's still Paddy O'Brien. I know it's not, but I'd like to think it is.
Yeah. Alan Rowland.
Oh, it bloody is, isn't it? Bound to be.
No wonder. That's where we are.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say yesterday, actually, was it's a good game when even Frank Murphy can't ruin it.
I didn't get that far because we got distracted by virology, but 17 all half time. I thought he turned on Cardiff a little bit at the breakdown.
There was two with Don Brandt. There was one where Don Brandt was over the ball and it probably should have been a penalty and he gave a knock on. And then a minute later, Don Brandt was on the ball for like half a second and he gave a penalty to Quinns.
I know.
And Don Brandt knew it as well. Like there's a little like knowing look from him. He's a magnificent player, by the way.
It was coming. The onslaught of the Dragons was coming, but it didn't have to be. They didn't need help from Frank Murphy. You know, he could have just carried on. If he'd carried on reffing the game the way he did in the first half, Harlequin still would have won, but it just wouldn't have been. It just felt like he didn't want to be caught in it. Maybe I read too much into the mindset of referees, but I just at the end of the game I felt like he didn't want to be caught up in a major story where a load of amateurs beat the English champions. A little bit too anti-vaxxer conspiracy theory, I know, but
there's one for the alt-right listeners amongst us.
It's possibly a bit flat earther, that one. Frank Murphy fixing it for Harlequins, the English champions up against some school teachers.
That was another point I was going to make actually as well. You know, remember last week we spoke about the difference between, you said the smell of Cardiff Arms Park always reminds you of cigars. Mm. And I did find it funny that, you know, when they're bringing on a load of semi-professionals off the bench, Cardiff is still bringing on solicitors, surveyors, school teachers. Even in the professional era, Cardiff are still managing to sneak some white collar professions into the mix.
Yeah, it's interesting now because if you go down the leagues. Premiership, Championship, a lot of the forwards will tend to be manual labourers because they haven't got time to train to the amount you need to play rugby at that level. So if they're doing something physical all day, Ronnie Kynes, for example, there's probably loads of examples, but he's a bricklayer, so he probably lays 1,000 bricks a day and he doesn't really need much weight training. He probably does some squats because his upper body is sorted. And that's good preparation then for Tuesday night training, Thursday night training, match on a Saturday. But when you, I don't know. if they're professional, they probably get 3-hour lunches. So they're in the gym, and then they're fine for the weekend. But it's definitely a thing where manual labour helps if you haven't got time to train. You know. To the amount you need to play front five forward or back row.
Oh, yeah, famously, you know, those magnificent Welsh sides packed full of steel workers and coal workers and
jobs. Pit props.
Pit props, exactly. People who needed, wouldn't have needed the gym anyway. Right, let's finish on this award though. So the thing that made that Wales France game, you know, so exhilarating was the fact that the rugby was so exciting that I didn't miss the crowd in there. Do you know what I mean? This was pre having crowds back in, but for a minute it didn't feel like I was watching something plastic.
Yeah, it might have helped that it was Super Saturday and it was the last one on and we'd all had a few.
Well, it wasn't, because you still had France the following week against... I mean, admittedly, look, we were on for the slam, weren't we? But, but you know, you still had France the following week, had to beat Scotland if they were going to win the title and all that kind of caper. Mm. But yeah, so that one was up there.
Thanks for reminding me, because I forgot that.
Sorry. No, yeah. The other game I'd throw into the mix, which I know you watched and I didn't, you would have watched it on TiVo, but I was on a stag do watching Wales lose to whoever we lost to in the Euros. Denmark, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was the Premiership rugby final, which would be up there. So many people I know have referred to that as whatever it was. Harlequins 38, Exeter 34 or something like that.
Mm.
Mm. I mean, I was looking to you for a bit of inspiration on that one, Murph, but I'm guessing...
You can get it. You can get the inspiration, mate. You're welcome to it. that was, again, seen in the context of the way rugby was played a year ago in the autumn. My Frank Murphy theories won't stand up to any scrutiny at all. But my theory about rugby as a sport, saying we can't do that again, like coaches and directors and chief execs and the bodies that run the different leagues, and I just said, listen, we can't churn out that shite that we churned out in the autumn. We've got to play some rugby even Exeter were trying to play some rugby. That's why they ended up conceding 38 points. But, and you know, that's not all down to them, you know, not defending properly. That was Harlequins playing amazing rugby. While we're on the subject, I know there's so much going on in the news and rugby generally, but Exeter got beat by Glasgow this weekend. And last weekend, Saracens got beat at home by Edinburgh.
Yep.
And it's barely registered.
Barely
registered any.
Mate, do you know what? It doesn't help that this bloody tournament is on BT. Like, it's bullshit. I know they've got the English Premiership, but back when Sky had everything, you at least had, I don't know, 6-7 million homes in the UK that had Sky. So it was still, you know, so that kind of news still registered.
Mm.
Nowhere near that many homes have BT Sport. Nowhere near
how many.
That many.
Do we know how many subscriptions there are for BT Sport?
I should know, Murph, but I don't.
anyway, listen, it's one up for the UFC, or two up for the UFC, those results. Yeah. Like, they've got no coverage. They've got no, like, you know, even like, for example, just the BBC Sport.
1.6 million in April, apparently.
Really? Wow. Wow, that's not a lot, is it? Where do people go to watch the UFC, then? The actual UFC, UFC.
Yeah. Well, they would watch it on BT Sport.
That's what I mean, again. Yeah. So that's a small... You can get UFC Fight Pass, which is, I suppose, I don't know what the take-up is on that, but that's not as big a sport as people like to think if there's only 1.6 million subscribers.
Globally it would be.
But, in the States, yeah. But here... that's on the BBC Sport Rugby Union page. Results got no mention at all, and there's a reason for that, because they like to be, you know, by their very nature, they're quite Gallagher Premiership centric. So they splashed on, you know, whoever did well that weekend, Saracens weren't a weak... When they lost to Edinburgh, they, you know, Toji was playing, Billy Vunipone was playing. The only back row player I could see was missing was Jackson Ray, and he's not exactly a world beater.
He's a great club player, isn't he? You know,
but, he's really important to them, he's not, you know, it's not a huge loss. And then I didn't actually see, I got it recorded, have I? Yeah, I must have. The Glasgow Exeter, I got that recorded, but I didn't see the Exeter side, so. I think there's an issue now with whenever Exeter play Glasgow, because they bought two of their best players.
Yeah.
So every time they face Glasgow go up two gears.
Who's the other? Sorry, Hogg and
Johnny Gray.
Johnny Gray, right? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Of course, I
forgot.
I momentarily couldn't see your "I heart Johnny Gray" tattoo.
yeah. So it's happened before where they actually faced their former club and ended up getting done. But you know, the much maligned UFC.
Mm.
Up yours, Gallagher Premiership, twice.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of those arguments, like, you know, the hemisphere arguments as well, isn't it? It's like it's not that the UFC has shit sides in it. It does have some shit sides in it, but it's the fact that it's a non-entity as a competition. Glasgow are a good side. Edinburgh playing really well this year. Obviously, all the Irish sides are good. And you know, very occasionally you get the moments from the Welsh sides, but it's. Yeah. It's the fact that it's just not a competition that's the problem with it. Right, game of the year. I'm going for the game I've enjoyed the most was last week's game against Cardiff against Toulouse. I just think it reignited everything that I loved about rugby.
Mm. Yeah, it wasn't. This is the thing. It wasn't just the game. It was the circumstances of what's happened. So, as we've said many times over, semi-professional players had to face the European champions and, you know, the World Player of the Year. And it was just, we've talked about it at length, so there's no point going over it again. But you're right. It was. It wasn't just the actual fixture itself, but the circumstances made it an amazing event. In hindsight, I still wish there'd be more people there. They keep saying sellout, but you know, I've seen it where down there where the stands are full all the way to the end, and there's people stood at either end in front of the hospitality boxes, you know, several deep at either end of the pitch as well. So that was what I would call full, but you know, I can't have that one, obviously, but I will go for the obvious because it's within my crappy memory distances, France, New Zealand in the autumn.
That was just absolutely incredible.
It's what everyone, France played the way everyone hoped they would play against New Zealand. And as a result, they got beaten 2 weeks running, which is such a rare thing for the All Blacks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right, Murph, I'm going to throw a few at you because we've got some in here. And again, I just want to see which one you fancy kind of grabbing hold of. So we've got a few from Reece Knott, which are good. So walking yellow card of the season, most slappable face, or fewest meters run per game, brackets, the Augustin Creevy Award.
Oh, that's harsh. Augustin
Creevy. I think it's harsh. I love Creevy.
In his prime, he was really good. A slappable face.
That's got to be a little bit, that one.
I mean, everyone, me and everyone listening to this now is going through the England squad. Just going through the England squad. Have you got an immediate one to mind?
But mate, for some reason, I think I'm catching your lack of memory now, and it might be because I'm three San Miguel's deep, but I did feel like there was a little point yesterday where I wouldn't have mind giving Marcus Smith a little slap.
When he was being arsey with Dan Fish.
Yeah, it's like, look, mate, you only dream of lacing Dan Fish's boots. You go home and put on Dan Fish pyjamas, even though he'd probably never heard of him before the game. There was something about that, but you know, I have this theory about English tens with flair that it never works out. You know, it didn't work out with Cipriani. You go back years ago, and you know, they could never get Barnes into that team. They always went back to Andrew, and
exactly.
I'm sure there were ones in the
Johnny 90s. Wilkinson was kicked first.
They were never. It doesn't sit well with them. So I have a theory that eventually they'll go back to Farrell at 10 or, you know, Andy Goode or someone.
And then he'll try and get Marcus Smith will try and get Welsh citizenship.
Well, this is it. It's all on the cards now, isn't it?
So slap all the faces. Look, not so much when he's on the pitch, but when he thinks he's being hilariously funny on telly, Joe Marler.
Yeah, I get that. I wouldn't say it to his face. He'd terrify me. But
I mean, every single one of them could clean my weight above their head, clean and snatch their weight, clean and jerk. That's what I meant. Clean and jerk my weight above their head. So I wouldn't argue with any of them. There used to be someone took over from Mike Brown as my least favourite England player, and I can't think who it is now. It'll come to me. But trouble is, people are waiting.
I mellowed over Brown after I met him once, and he was incredibly quiet and shy bloke, it seemed.
Yeah. That's fine. Know, just don't be a knob on the pitch, though.
Yeah, that's it.
You know.
Grade A knob on the pitch.
Yeah. He's gone now, but George Cruz used to rub me up the wrong way.
Really?
With his passive-aggressive nature not the breakdown, but after the whistle had gone, he'd be all passive-aggressive with the opposition. That used to wind me up.
That stuff from Ellis Genge winds me up a bit.
Of course.
A few times, yeah.
Oh, there he is, my mate. They made him captain, and now suddenly he's a saint.
Well, and he's set to leave as well.
Yeah. But every time he was on the pitch in the Six Nations, he was a chippy knob.
Mm.
Every single time. Even against Italy, when they were 30, 40 points in front, he came off the bench and started picking on one of them.
Yeah.
Over what?
Yeah.
I think I said on here, what is he so pissed off about? You know, if it's fine. You know, if he came from a rough area or if he had a tough upbringing, that's fine. But you're a very highly paid professional now, so just grow up. That was my quote, I think, roughly.
Yeah, I am going for a player who retired 20 years ago, and I'm still saying there is no more slappable face in the world than Matt Dawson's. Honestly, I've made my peace with that whole England side. It was the worst day of my life when they won that.
I was in work, thank God.
Were you?
Yeah, God.
I was
in work.
I remember phoning my brother afterwards, and it was like a post-apocalyptic chat. I was just like, well, they'll always have this over us. They'll always have it over us. And I've made my peace with pretty much every member of that side. You know, players like Delalio, who I hated, but you realise actually, you know, I got no problem with Delalio, really.
No.
You know, Neil Back, I've always had massive admiration for. But there's something about Dawson that I will never, ever be able to never be able to get over.
Yeah. Will Greenwood at the time, I'm a huge Will Greenwood fan. Even when he was being successful with England, I didn't mind it. But as he's getting older and he's presenting the Lions Tour,
well, it feels like he stopped watching rugby about 10 years ago, didn't it? I thought, like, when he started, he was quite a good pundit. Do you know what I mean? Like 2005 or 6 or whatever, he was quite a good pundit. And then it felt like he just didn't watch a game of rugby for 10 years. And although I met his old man the other week and he was a thoroughly nice bloke, so I feel bad about it. I think
there was a soft spot as well from the Lions Tour 97 when he swallowed his tongue or something and got knocked out so badly that he was in a bad way.
He did swallow his tongue, didn't he?
It's the when he does his serious talk on the build up to a Lions Tour, and you can tell he's done it like 5 times before on previous tours, or 10 times before previous Lions tests. You know, he'd probably done way more than that, and it's a little bit like Scott Quinnell's shouty bit.
Yeah, I know.
We said this
at the time, didn't we? It just felt like Sky were phoning the whole thing in this time round. And normally the coverage on Sky, I've always thought, has been
Cue Scott shouting. Cue Scott will be. Yeah. Will be in the CDS knob. Yeah.
Okay. Right. We're going to Scott in the fan truck in 10. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Turn it on, Scott. Turn on all the shouty bollocks.
The thing I've enjoyed over the last 2 weeks, though, with those Cardiff games being on Channel 4, is maybe I didn't appreciate him at the time, but Miles Harrison really is a top quality commentator, and I don't know if it's just because Sky had England games for so many years that it rubbed me up the wrong way, you know, that he got excited as England was scoring, but he does it. He's a genuine neutral commentator, and that feels like it's a dying art to me.
I think some of it might be because he hasn't got Stuart Barnes alongside him.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And
much like me, with my back support, having to carry Yestin and Dan all the time, Miles is not. He hasn't got a sea anchor hanging off him like Stuart Barnes, and he's able to soar away. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. It's a very good point. I like it. I think you're on it. That's, we got a lot. I'm sure there's loads of Stuart Barnes fans listening to this.
I met him at Green Man. Green Man Festival.
I met him at Sarri's Ospreys a couple of years ago.
Pre-season thing they
do. We did actually record something, and he was far be it from me to speculate, but he was slurring his words an awful lot, so I wonder whether shit might have been on the red wine. But
I've heard he likes to drop the drink, but he was sober when I met him. He nicked a chip off me, which was touch and go whether I punched him, but he's only a little guy, so
exactly. Quickly on this, could you remember him? I don't remember him when he was playing for Newport. I remember him playing for Bath and then playing for England. Yeah. And people give him stick for being a shit player, and I don't think that was ever true. Like I remember of him is he was a very exciting 10, actually. Yeah. And
he's a lion.
And a swashbuckling,
10. Yeah. Nothing. He probably, like you said, just
too creative to be playing for England.
Like a lot of those swashbuckling, especially in that era, swashbuckling tens, tackling wasn't a strong suit. But
that's all backs from the 80s and 90s, isn't it?
There was some around.
Bateman and some of those boys. But yeah.
But he's definitely like the way he played was of a Welsh tens lineage. You know what I mean?
Well, he learnt it all in Baselig, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, let's go on to, let's see what else we say. Oh, this is a good one. I enjoyed this. I don't know what this guy's name is, but it's the Madeley Academy Duke of Edinburgh is his handle on Twitter. And I like to think it's either Richard Madeley or the Duke of Edinburgh. one of the two.
One of them's no longer with us, so.
Well, yeah, from beyond the grave, Murph,
okay.
If you're having all your virology conspiracies on here, I'm going to do my Derek Acora bit.
It's just as legitimate as my virology, as my Frank Murphy theory, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, that's it. Join us next week when Derek Acora speaks to the Duke of Edinburgh about about who should play in the front five for the Dragons.
Yeah.
Mary loves Dick. Right, I'll go back to the question. The award for the most frustrating game by Wales against 14 players.
That's a crowded field.
It is, isn't it? Make a bed up because we're going to be here a while.
We won them all.
Well, it's no, we didn't win all of them, did we? We must have lost one of them.
Did we lose against 14 men at some stage?
Yes, France got a man sent off.
Oh, yeah.
At one point in that game. And someone last autumn, that wouldn't have been this year, but I think like Georgia, we wouldn't have lost to Georgia. But anyway, the one that springs to mind for me.
I think the answer is all of them. We laboured past 14 men, as we've covered before. Repeatedly. Can you pick up that noise on my
microphone? Yeah, what's going on?
I think if my wife is making a massive noise, that means Emma Raducanu has just won Sports Personality of the Year. I can't think what else it would cause. There's nothing I could have done to make her celebrate that. So that's the only thing I can imagine that's happened on telly.
Yeah, you're right. That must be right. But we'll come back to Sports Personality of the Year. We've got something else that grinds my gears these days. But what the hell were we talking about before that chair?
We were talking about labouring past 14.
Right. The one that springs to mind for me is the Scotland game. And this was the point where I had to look myself in the mirror after the game and say, right, what would the 10-year-old you have said if you've been watching that game? And I know what the 10-year-old, because essentially we played the same game in 1994 where Mike Reyer scored twice in the corner, and that was, a barely functioning Welsh side that just happened to have a good day in the mud. And that moment of genius from Lewis Rees-Sammet over the top was, the 10-year-old me would have enjoyed that moment of genius. But that as a game, to even get me to that point of, right, you need to stop looking at rugby so bloody seriously, shows how bad we were.
Sacrilege. I mean, come on. Life and death. Yeah, you're right. Thanks for reminding me what happened against Scotland, because I couldn't remember the game. Yeah, we were pants, weren't we? And we were looking like loose in that game until Willis Alaholo did like a bit of a loop around the back Willis, of someone.
That's
and fed Uri Samet. And then I was probably, I can't remember if it was the first time we actually saw him at full pelt for Wales. Because I remember in the build up, not listening to blow my own trumpet or anything, but. I did say Louis Riesam has been in the Welsh side for a while, and we haven't seen him in space yet. And if he does get in space, then we get an opportunity to see what he can do. And he did get a chance in this Six Nations anyway. But if it hadn't been for that, that was going to be us coming on the Sunday and saying PVAC out.
I have had we did have a couple of messages that throughout that whole Six Nations that simply said, "Lighten up, lads! We're lighten up, lads! We're up for a slam here." And it's fair enough, but I mean, you know,
the jam slam,
you know,
just shut the door.
yeah, you know, it would have. I mean, but that's the thing is that you can't fluke a grand slam. You just can't. Winning five games with luck is not possible, and and it showed. And ironically, probably not even irony, but the best performance was in defeat. You know, that was by far and away the best performance.
It was
against France. And there was no luck, you know, no luck involved. And in fact, I still haven't seen it back, but in the first 10 minutes of that game, I think it's Damien Penaud goes into Alan Wynne's head with a shoulder. But obviously with the French.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You never see it back. And if they'd have had a man sent off after 10 minutes, then, you know, the jam slam was on.
Yeah, that's going back to conspiracy theories. That is a genuine thing where foreign TV directors are not showing things that implicate their own side.
No,
South Africa were doing it, and France do it regularly, and not just in internationals. France do it in club matches.
The brief in France is make things look as dramatic and artistic as possible. I imagine the brief in South Africa is much more along your conspiracy theory lines.
Well, yeah, but dramatic and the brief in France, dramatic and what was the word?
Artistic.
Well, yeah, but there's dramatic and artistic, and then there's cheating by not showing Alan Wynne-Jones getting his head smashed in by someone.
Yeah,
shoulder.
But I feel in France that they glossed over that because there was a moment of you know, of Roman and Tamak's hair looking particularly beautiful.
Right, okay.
I don't think it was born out of anything malevolent. I think it was born out of, you know, something beautiful. Yeah, on the other side of the pitch.
I think there's that on that occasion may not have been, but there's other issues there because Austin Healey has flagged it up on BT Sport in Europe. If there's foul play by a French team, you never see
a replay. Point.
No, it doesn't matter what anyone's hair was doing at the time. You just won't see that again. So, and I called for they got independent doctors to adjudicate on head injuries, and they're going to have to when we get to really big events like Lions Tours and World Cups, going to have to get independent TV directors in.
Yeah, I mean, also it would have been nice in the Lions Tour if we could have had independent TMOs. You know, that would also probably been quite nice, you know, rather than going back to the 70s and having home officials.
Don't start Razzie off. Do you see him having a sing-song? There's a clip of him having a sing-song.
What in the name of holy Christ is that about?
Vanilla Ice Baby. I mean, I quite liked him when he was in Ireland. Coaching, was he?
I quite liked him when they beat England in the Rugby World Cup final as well. I was sold at this point.
But he's moving into the slappable face category.
In fact, it's probably right up there, isn't it? Really, let's be honest. If we were to go back and retrospectively give that award, right?
He's always got that like cheesy grin on his face. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. Let's finish on two things. This one was from Paul Price. The is he any good? I just can't tell. Award sponsored by Nick Tompkins.
Sponsored by.
I mean, he is the enigma, isn't he? You know, we've seen moments of brilliance, and as I've regularly said, the best ever debut by a player in a Welsh shirt.
Best ever, ever, ever. Really?
Right. Well, all right. Okay. No. The best I've seen.
Yeah. In recent memory, probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Keith Jarrett would be the best ever.
It's probably a few good debuts. I think Emma Lewis's debut for Wales was quite good from memory. But yeah, you're right. Well, look, there's a few players actually. If you scour around, like probably a lot of people who've got the jury is still out on Rhys Carey.
Yeah.
Even though I'm obviously a committed fan, right next to my I heart is a Rhys Carey portrait on my rear flank. But he, you know, he hasn't convinced. There's a lot of people he's yet to convince as well. So,
I tell you one I'm happy to give the award to, having been proven thoroughly wrong over the past fortnight. And that is young Jim Botham.
Yeah.
Real deal. He's the real deal. Mm. He's not a seven, but he's the real deal.
What would you have him, though?
I think he's a club rugby. I think he's a dynamic quick eight.
Right.
I think. Or failing. Yeah, well,
that's good on their surface, their home surface. Mm. But if you play well, on
he,
a...
I think that Harlequins pitch didn't look up to much yesterday, and he was eating up ground on that.
Yeah, but he didn't play eight.
No, but my point is, I think he could have, you know, given the track underneath him. Yeah. And that's another sub point, right? We'll be here for hours, Murph. I thought Sam Moore played very well yesterday.
Yeah, I did.
And every time I've seen him play for Cardiff/Cardiff Blues, I've been impressed with him. Yet he has spent much more time playing for the Rags than he has for Cardiff. I know he had a big chunk of injuries, but what's going on there? Because, you know, James Ratty's fine, but they're not awash with eights down there, especially if Navidi's injured.
No.
I don't understand why he doesn't feature more for the regional side.
Yeah, no, you got a good point there. The problem, I mean, rumours that Faletau's going there next year.
I mean, it's the worst kept secret, isn't it? Presuming he is going to end up there.
But their back row is resources. I mean, it's already crowded. You know, the reason I imagine Sam Moore doesn't get many games is because if all else fails, they can use Josh Turnbull.
But this is a really good point, because
and he's a leader and everything. You know,
I mentioned this on Twitter when the Faletau thing first surfaced, and the fella who runs the Cardiff Rugby Life Twitter said, "Yeah, but there's a big difference between having back row resources and genuine eight options."
Yeah,
and I actually said, "Yeah, so that's a really good point." But then, you know, I don't. If they're not awash with genuine eight options, it makes the whole Sam Moore thing a bit more puzzling. Maybe, you know, well, look, maybe it's just fitness. I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, they've used Will Boyd whenever they haven't used Josh Turnbull this season. They used Will Boyd rather than turn to Sam Moore. So I don't know if Sam Moore has had a few niggling injuries in the autumn.
He's had a lot of injuries prior to this season, I think, but he's been playing a lot for Cardiff RFC. I think he's featured in a lot of games for them. So, I don't know. I mean, for me, he's a much better player than Welsh Premiership.
Yeah, when he first arrived, he did have a few games to date. And
yeah, he did. Yeah.
He wasn't very convincing then, but he looks much better now. So, well, there's quite a few players I would imagine are going to shoot up the pecking order at the Blues after what's happened in the last fortnight. He might be another one of them. So
he might well. Right. Okay. Let's finish on this then, Murph. Seeing as your wife was so excited by the Emma Raducanu victory, in which we haven't verified, by the way.
No, but I guarantee, you know, that, she wouldn't cheer like that for Tyson Fury. I can guarantee.
So quick sub point of my now hatred for the Sports Personality of the Year, which I used to love as a kid.
Do you know what happened tonight? I saw the beginning, right? You know the 13-year-old skateboard Olympian?
Yeah.
They interviewed her on the stage.
Right.
They made her bring a fucking skateboard with her. And she stood there with her foot on a skateboard being interviewed by... Being interviewed by Claire Balding.
But there was also a point 10 years ago when it was that MotoGP, like James Toseland, the MotoGP rider, was playing piano on the stage. I just thought, what the hell is going on here? Because In the 90s, when the BBC used to have sports rights, it used to be called Sports Review of the Year. And then the last, like, 20 minutes was the Sports Personality of the Year Award, which, better still, was decided by a panel of experts rather than letting the godforsaken public choose who should win this award. Yeah. For the record, I've no problem with Raducanu winning it because it's like, okay, you know, that's some bloody achievement.
But well, I don't know who else was in the running, but... I mean, it is to win that as a qualifier is
and aged 18, you know, it's incredible,
it's mega, and it's so many decades since this happened as well. So yeah.
Even if it is tennis, it's amazing. To bring all that back together, I wanted to ask you for your Welsh Rugby Sports Personality of the Year, and I think it should be based on. You know, based on something real, Murph, not, you know, like, you know.
Oh, I can base that on real, mate. I can do that on real. Yeah. Even with my shitty memory and at short notice, I can base this on real. You ready?
Yeah, go on.
So I got a Canadian niece. So I got in-laws in Alberta, Canada. Mm-hmm. One of their daughters goes to university in the States on a soccer scholarship. And she and all her friends in university in America follow Lewis Rees Sammet on, I don't know, Instagram, TikTok, whatever. And a lot of them don't even know what he does. Mm. But a lot of them, as a result, do know what he does because he puts clips of himself playing rugby. And I don't think, well, maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't think the governing bodies and a lot of people realize the reach of Lewis Rees Sammet because he, unusually for a rugby player, he's quite pretty. I mean, if he couldn't run, he'd be in a boy band.
Yeah, there is there is almost like a K-pop appeal to him, isn't there?
Yeah.
On social media.
Yeah. He's got his reach, you know, I don't know what his figures are. I could probably look at it, but the number, you know, they calculate these things these days on the number of followers you've got worldwide and where those followers are. Maybe. But his reach is well beyond these shores, put it that way. That's my Welsh rugby sports personality.
Okay, that would very much be a 2021 opinion of a sports personality. If we were going to go for a 1990s one based on a panel of... Based on a panel of experts, and by that I mean grizzled rugby hacks who smoked 20 Rothmans.
Smoking Rothmans. Yeah, okay. Well, it'd be Alan Jones then.
Oh, really? No, that's a bit obvious, mate. I was all gearing this up for the Dan Fish to take. Well, I think we have to give it to Dan Fish, mate.
I think he's coming too late. I think he's left his run too late. He's done it in the last 3 weeks of the year.
Dan Fish will win the 2022 award when he plays 10 for Wales, undoubtedly.
Yeah, when he signs a massive contract with the Dragons.
Massive contract with the Dragons. they then qualify for Europe, reach the semi-finals, and it's a jam slam headed up by the Fish at 10.
I'm not knocking your Dan Fish selection, but it's nowhere near as... near as much merit as my Lewis Rees Sammet one.
It's not all, in fact, the Alan Wynne Jones Lazarus Award for coming back from the dead to head onto that Lions tour. That in other years, you know, if that had been a normal Lions tour, Murph, we'd have been dealing with something special there. Which, unfortunately, it was like we've said a million times before. It wasn't an enjoyable Lions tour for a number of reasons, but. But yeah, mate, good stuff. I enjoyed that.
Me too. Did we run on too long? No.
Oh, it's been. Yeah, I mean, people stopped listening about an hour ago, I think.
I finished all my salted peanuts. So.
I know. I think I've run out of Twiglets and have moved on to the Wotsits, which I don't even like. Yeah. I tell you what's bad. Do you remember those cheese footballs?
Mm.
They're not good.
I do remember, yeah.
They're not good.
Do you know what I miss, though, is those hedgehogs with... silver onion, yes. and a block of cheese
and pineapple.
The Holy Trinity on a cocktail stick.
Right, shame. all of these Patreon specials coming to you next year. If you would like to, if you would like to fund us eating party snacks next year, then please do so. But a big thanks to the Mighty Murph for another stellar effort carrying.
You're welcome.
Carrying the rest of the team this this week. Definitely.
Does this mean we're not reporting on the Boxing Day match?
We'll be back in the new year and we'll do a review of all of the games. Yeah, you can, mate. I was going to
go to that game with friends of mine.
Go.
Drink a heroic amount of Guinness, then come back home to record in the evening.
if you'd like to see this happen, that's another Patreon special there ready for you.
Yeah,
you must be over the age of 21 to even listen to that. It wouldn't even be right for 18-year-olds to listen to that for that version. But no, we will be back in the new year to do that. But yeah, a big thanks to the Mighty Murph for his contributions this year. A thanks to Yestin, a thanks to Dan for his fleeting appearances every now and again. A big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. Thanks to everyone who has contributed this year, all the different guests. And most of all, a big thanks to you, the listener. So thank you for listening in 2021. Have a brilliant Christmas. And we will be back in the new year to report on all of this and to chat complete nonsense to you. Thanks for listening.
I give you my heart. The very next day, you give it away. This year, to stop me from tears, I give it to someone special. Last Christmas, I give you my heart. The very next day, you give it away.
Sports Social Podcast Network.